The Iran deal is defective at its core.
The opportunity for ISIS to regain strength.
Ferocious battle took place near the capital of Kabul, as seen by the Taliban.
Palestinian territories announced it would cut ties with the U.S. and Israel.
Welcome to The Hill on the Middle East. Veteran journalist and co-founder of the Media Line News Agency, Felice Friedson, in discussion as we look at issues of the Middle East impacting the United States.
With elections underway in the United States and the world waiting to see whether President Trump will lead the free world for another 4 years, the foreign policy issues that have played a central role in the Trump administration's first term have received woefully little attention during the campaign for a second 4 years. Daniel Kurtzer served as U.S. ambassador to Egypt during the Clinton administration and was ambassador to Israel during the term of President George W. Bush. Ambassador Kurtzer is the S. Daniel Abraham Professor of Middle East Policy Studies at Princeton University and joins me on The Hill on the Middle East. Welcome, Ambassador Kurtzer.
Thank you.
It's been asked over and over. President Trump's highest marks come from foreign policy successes, primarily in the Middle East. Why have we heard so little about foreign affairs during the re-election campaign?
I think there are two factors at play. Number one, the domestic issues on the American agenda are extremely complex and very meaningful right now. We have one of the highest COVID infection rates in the world. We've lost over 215,000 American lives. The economy has taken a tremendous hit. We have a race relations issue that has been exacerbated over the past few months. Immigration remains very much a top-tier priority. So you look around at American politics, and everybody is focused inward. That said, President Trump's foreign policy has not been a success, except in very specific respects in the Middle East. Obviously, for the current government in Israel, there's great satisfaction with what Trump has done with respect to the Palestinian-Israeli issue, the so-called Trump peace plan, the normalization with three countries in the region. But elsewhere in the region, as well as elsewhere in the world, Trump's policies have created great uncertainty and a certain amount of damage to U.S. interests. And so it's true, as you said, that it's not on the agenda. But in a way, Trump is probably lucky that it's not on the agenda because he would not do well if people understood how shabbily he had treated our allies and how much he had embraced many of the most significant dictators and repressive regimes in the world.
You were intimately involved in the quest for peace between Israel, the Palestinians, and the Arab world during two administrations. In your opinion, does what we're seeing with the Abraham Accords, and I realize you touched on this a bit, but do you think that itself is a path towards long-term peace?
The agreements that have been reached between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Sudan are in and of themselves very positive. For a long time, U.S. Diplomats have been working towards this end back in the 1990s after the Madrid Peace Conference. In fact, the ice was broken when we created what were called the multilateral peace negotiations that brought most of the Arab world into direct contact with Israel. I, in fact, chaired the American delegation to what was called the steering group, and Israel and Saudi Arabia, and Tunisia, Egypt, Jordan, Palestinians all sat together in a very small setting to try to figure out how to deal with some functional issues such as economic development, water, environment, and so forth. So this has been a long time coming, and it's good that it was consummated over the past couple of months. But it is definitively not a pathway to the kind of peace that Israel requires, because that peace involves the Palestinians. And in that respect, the Trump administration has pushed the Palestinians to the sidelines. And these accords don't do anything to advance the Palestinian issue.
Ambassador Kurtzer, you represented the United States in Egypt, the iconic definition of a cold peace. Could the agreements with the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and presumably others help to warm the Egyptian and Jordanian deals? The people-to-people don't exist till today.
Yeah, the situations in different Arab countries are different, and I think it would be inadvisable to try to compare them. Egypt, Jordan, Israel's immediate neighbors went to war several times with Israel. And there are residual issues within those societies, as there are within Israel, in terms of losses, combat losses, missing in action and prisoners of war. So in those countries, the degree to which Israel is considered a taboo subject remains a problem. Both Egypt and Jordan have maintained the treaty relationship pretty seriously when it comes to security, but the normalization issues have really fallen by the wayside. With these other three countries, there's been almost no violence or actual engagement in hostilities. And so there is no memory of Israelis and Emiratis killing each other or Israelis and Bahrainis killing each other. And that makes a significant difference. It's almost the equivalent of Bahrain and the Emirates being outside the region where they can define their own interests without the history of conflict with Israel. So I'm not sure there's going to be any carryover effect here. We hope so. It would be wonderful if warmer peace prevailed, but I would be doubtful, frankly.
You are listening to The Hill on the Middle East, hosted by Felice Friedson.
I'm speaking with an ambassador, Daniel Kurtzer. Ambassador, we're hearing a great deal of concern that some of the decisions of the Trump administration will be walked back if Vice President Biden becomes president. How likely is that to happen?
Well, it's a question of whether or not one's concerned or one is looking forward to it. There are a number of issues, particularly on the Israel-Palestine question, where there has been very significant opposition to what Trump has done here in Washington. For example, cutting off communications with the Palestinians by shutting down the PLO office in Washington or shuttering the consulate in Jerusalem, it left us no means with which to talk to Palestinian officials. Cutting off aid to the Palestinian Authority and to the United Nations agency that deals with refugees. Even the issue of Jerusalem, it was certainly a good decision to move the American embassy, but then President Trump said he was taking Jerusalem off the table, which would squash Palestinian aspirations to have a capital in the area that they want to have a capital, a subject that has always been on the negotiating agenda. So obviously for those who are supportive of what President Trump has done, there would be concern that some of these issues might be changed. But on the other hand, we might see a return to a more conventional American approach, which tries to actually act as an honest broker, something that we have not been acting as in the last 4 years.
How will U.S. policy towards Iran change?
I think on the Middle East agenda, and actually even in the global agenda, this may be one of President Biden's top priorities. Biden, of course, was part of the Obama administration that negotiated the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, with five other powers, Russia, China, Germany, the UK, and France. And the objective was to stop the Iranian nuclear program in its tracks, walk back much of it, including removing enriched uranium from the country, and shuttering some of the nuclear facilities, and to buy time, to buy anywhere between 10 and 15 years, during which there was an objective to try to build onto that agreement and stop that program forever. President Trump pulled out of that agreement in 2018, and Iran has restarted many of the nuclear activities that it had stopped under the JCPOA. And I want to emphasize this. Everyone agrees that Iran had been abiding by the JCPOA, and whenever there was a question of its performance, it fixed the problem. So that after 2018, for the past almost 2.5 years, we have lost a critical tool to keep the Iranian nuclear program in check. And therefore, one can expect that a Biden administration will try to re-enter the JCPOA and therefore to try to get Iran back into compliance with its provisions. Now, that doesn't answer the question of what about Iran's other activities, its missile development, its support for terrorism, its activities in Syria and Yemen. And those are going to be very important issues on the agenda, and I would expect that the Biden administration would be very tough. But the most important issue is to stop the Iranian nuclear program immediately and then to work to stop it permanently.
Some critics of the Abraham Accords dismiss the agreement as an arms deal for the Gulf states. From what you can see, is the qualitative military edge promised to Israel safe?
Well, I don't think the Accords were arms deals, although, in fact, that was the those were the needed incentives, I think, for the UAE and Bahrain, and the removal of Sudan from the terrorism list was the needed incentive. So in some ways, the Accords represent a normalization of relations between these countries and the United States, in which Israel then plays a part because the United States insisted upon it. I don't believe that it will affect Israel's qualitative military edge. There's already discussion in the administration regarding the sale of F-22 advanced aircraft, something which had not been on the table previously. There are also ways of ensuring that if F-35s are sold to the UAE, that they will not contain all of the advanced avionics and electronics that Israel has in its arsenal. So I think the United States will be very careful to maintain Israel's edge. This has been a principle that both Republican and Democrat administrations have adhered to quite carefully, and I would expect it to be the same in the future.
Ambassador Kurtzer, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has been criticized for his unrestrained embrace of President Trump, sometimes referred to as Israel's Republican leader. If there's a new American administration, will that be counterproductive?
Well, I think that the Israeli government will have to do some repair work with respect to its relationship with the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party leadership. Particularly in the last 10 years or so, during the tenure of Prime Minister Netanyahu, there's no question that the Israeli government under Prime Minister Netanyahu has favored the Republican Party in the United States, and therefore a real chasm has developed between the Israeli government and the Democratic Party. I think it was evident, for example, as long ago as 2015, when the Prime Minister arranged a joint session of Congress behind the back of the Obama administration, and that led to, arranged a speech to a joint session of Congress behind the back of the Obama administration, that led to the boycotting of the Prime Minister's speech by some Democrats, a development that was unheard of before. So there will have to be repair work, and I think it'll need to start from the Israeli side, reaching out to the Democrats, finding ways to talk about the issues on which they disagree, particularly Iran and the Palestinian issue, and to rebalance Israel's relationship in a nonpartisan way with the United States, something that had always been the case until recently.
Any chance a political appointment still in the cards for you?
Well, I don't think so. There's a new generation of experts and those with experience within the Biden camp, some of whom served in the Obama administration, some of whom have arrived on the scene more recently. And I think for those of us with either gray or no hair, we're probably relegated to the sidelines, but we'll continue to offer our advice and our opinions to try to help move the policy forward.
Well, thank you here for your opinion. Ambassador Daniel Kurtzer, thanks for joining us on The Hill on the Middle East.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Hill on the Middle East. For the trusted Mideast source, go to themedialine.org. We will uncover the story. Stay informed and stay safe. The Hill on the Middle East is brought to you by the Media Line News Agency.